Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
All right. So hello, everybody. Welcome back to Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. I feel like I just had like a radio voice. I'm not sure why I'm trying to have a smooth
theater coming out, Drew.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Smooth intro to Eminent Teachnology. Today we're going to talk about, it's just Rochelle and I, which is awesome. We're going to have another two-person conversation. And today we're going to talk about the COVID vaccine. And I feel like I should give a disclaimer, like we're not medical doctors. So, you know, don't try and follow our advice completely. But I think I think
what we're going to talk about is not giving any medical advice, but just saying, you know, discussing the history of why there's resistance to the, mm-hmm. taking the vaccine, and perhaps helping people understand the complications of not for a larger society. Because, you know, in the very beginning, when this vaccine first hit, a lot of the health professionals were talking about herd immunity. So I think we might define what herd immunity means. Mm-hmm. I think we might try to decipher as much as we can about how much we know about vaccinations, just in the sense of, you know, we get a flu vaccine every year. Why is this vaccine so different? So we're not trying to be doctors or tell you what to do. Not at all. We're not trying to impinge upon your civil rights. If you don't want to take one, have at it. We're just trying to make sure that at least you have enough information from us to go do more research and find out what the real deal is, because we're just going to give you the top and there you need to do your own research to find out about it. But actually saying no to the vaccine without knowing everything because of the misinformation that's out there. And that's one of the problems with the internet and social media and all these things. Anybody can say anything and it becomes a part of the nether or ether that is the internet. And it may or may not be factual.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like, there's so much stuff going on with the vaccines right now. It's a very hot issue. Like, I think it was just today that was it the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Some states are halting it because of blood clotting, and like, it's such a small percentage. And I know like any deaths are awful, but like, I think they said like 6 out of 6 million deaths from blood clotting from one of the vaccines. And it's like, man, that sucks. But like, it doesn't suck as bad as, you know, getting COVID and dying. Like, your chances are still a lot better.
Absolutely. And I think a part of it is, it starts with a little bit of politics, you know. So when this vaccine first hit, there was a lot of talk about whether it was truly a vaccine, mm-hmm. the groups that were more affected by it than others, you know, whether or not the vaccine was a hoax. You know, all of these things were out in the public domain about COVID.
Yeah.
So I would just say, if you just imagine the viruses and the pandemics that we have had over history. So we had the Black Death, you know, and everybody knows that that was because of, you know, rats getting into the food sources and getting around people and killing a lot of people. We have polio, you know, polio, measles. I mean, you could just go on and on and on. There were all these things that happened that really took a ding out of our populations because we didn't understand it. And there was a lot of, you know, some of the older vaccines, the information resources that we have now didn't have all this literature and all these conversations, you know. So when, you know, I grew up, you know, I have a circle on my arm. You can tell how old I am. I have had that indentation on my arm where I got the early shots back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. You know, most people, my children don't have that scar, yeah. lack of a better word. You know, so, you know, we've learned so much more about, you know, healthcare and how to take care of ourselves. You know, we go to the doctor, we have our annual checkups. When we don't feel well for long periods of time, we go to the doctor. I think we should view this pandemic with the same concern. You know, is this something that I can do to help protect myself? You know, women go and have mammograms, men have prostate and colon, and women do too have colon and all these other mm-hmm. exams that we have. We should see COVID similar to that in the way that it is a catastrophic disease if allowed to run wild. And then what can we do to protect ourselves. How can we be proactive? So wearing a mask, you know, we've heard a lot about that too, you know, yeah. And I think everybody on the planet could tell you wearing a mask is uncomfortable as all get out all day long. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But if I get to live another day, I can get to a day where I may not have to wear a mask. But if I die because I didn't wear the mask, then what have I done?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel sort of like being, you know, I definitely get scared of, like, I don't want to get COVID. Like, it would be awful. But I feel like being relatively young, I feel like I would probably be fine. But at the same time, like, I would hate to give it to somebody else. Like, you know, thinking about, like, if I were to go see my parents and then, like, you know, for some reason I gave it to them and one of them died or they both died. It was like, man, that would be like, that's awful. And like, wearing a mask and also just like, you know, taking the hit and not being able to see people, I think is a big, it sucks in the short term, but in the long term, I'm sure it'll be, you know, well worth it.
I don't know if I agree with you about being young, because we've seen children as young as 5 and 6 years old die from COVID.
Yes.
Yeah. People who would traditionally we'd be recognized as healthy die of COVID. So, I mean, I think there are so many things we don't know about what this virus does when it gets in your system. You know, do you have, you know, if you take someone like me, so I'm not physically fit. I don't exercise, you know, I'm trying to follow Andy's recommendation that we eat carrots, but you know, even that's a stretch. You know, so I'm not, but you know, if I were to get it, would I die simply because my body is not used to fighting things, right? Because,
right.
You know, I go to work and then I get to bed and go to sleep. That's about as much activity as I have. So is there a possibility that I am more vulnerable because I'm not fit? Or am I more vulnerable because I've not been around people for a long time, right? So we have been home for a little more than a year now, you know, so we aren't used to that interactions. So I think I told you this, my husband is a third grade school teacher. Mm-hmm. And so every year, whatever they get over there at the school, he has built up some kind of immunity to it. So it doesn't affect him. Every once in a while, he gets a very serious flu, but for the most part, he has an immunity to it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The fact that he has not been in a class for a year, does his body now have to relearn how to be around people who have various things going on in their health again, or will his body say, oh yeah, I remember we could fight against that. So can we, you know, what is the reason for the comorbidities? Why do we care about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially being like a school teacher, like especially like third graders. I'm sure those kids are super dirty. Like,
I do not know, and I do not want to speak on that. That would not be an appropriate thing to say. I don't know, but I would just say remembering being a child, hand washing was not among my priorities.
Yes, yes.
Adult now, I wash my hands 50-11 times a day, but you know, back then, hand washing was, you know, Dad, wash my hands again. I just washed it this morning.
Oh, I know. I was probably pretty bad even like before COVID. Like when all this stuff came out, and I honestly, like I never even really got the flu shot before this year, just because I didn't really think about it that much. I was like, you know, I usually don't get the flu. I don't really like shots. Like, I'm not going to get it. And I just sort of like, I've been that way. And we got it when we got the shots when our son was little, but hadn't really gotten them since then. And eventually, like for a while, I was like, you know, flu shots, who cares? Nobody needs them. And then eventually I was sort of like, oh, like, have I become like an anti-vaxxing person now without these flu shots? Like, I've been going so long and I really have just been thinking about myself, like not necessarily about other people and am I getting the flu and being asymptomatic and giving it to someone else or, you know, anything like that. And it's just like, oh yeah, sometimes I feel like an idiot because it's like, why not just get the flu shot every year? It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't even really hurt for me. So it's sort of like, just suck it up and get it, try and do the right thing.
I get the flu shot every year. Some employers have made it a condition of employment. But I get the flu shot every year. I've never thought why I get the flu shot. I just get the flu shot because I had the opportunity to see my husband get a serious case of the flu. And I mean, I don't know how many years ago, but it was on our anniversary. So like our anniversary is March 12th. And like March 11th, he got sick. And I didn't see him again until like March 15th or 16th. That's how bad it had hit him. you know, and he was really, and my husband, you know, I think this is true of most men. If it's not, please forgive me. But most men don't make the best patients, you know, especially when they're at home, right? So,
oh yeah,
got the wife has got to cook and feed, check your temperature, make sure everything is good. And they want to be just left alone. My husband just wanted to be left alone. And I'm like, okay, I got to run, take your temperature, make sure you haven't gotten too high. You know, so he was not happy about any of that. Just go away and leave me alone is what he was saying to me all the time, which just made me feel so terrible, but yet and still. So, yes. I did not want to have those symptoms. So I did not want to feel like he felt. So I get the flu shot because I just couldn't even imagine about that.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about something first. We used a word earlier, comorbidity. I want to talk about what that word means. It's become so much of our vernacular that we assume people know what that means. And comorbidity simply means that you have more than one condition. So if you have high blood pressure and heart disease, that's considered comorbidity. If you have cancer and diabetes, that's considered comorbidity. And it can be much simpler than that. You could have, you know, gout and intestinal problems. That's a comorbidity. So yeah. It's just simply having more than one condition. And in the case of COVID, depending on the comorbidity you have, you may be more susceptible to the negative effects of COVID greater than somebody that would not. So as you were discussing, you are a young person and you're in, you know, physically good shape. So like if you had, I don't know, like let's just say you had a migraine headache and you had, I don't even know what's a pretty generic thing to have, but whatever it would be that's not considered one of those, you know, quoted high risk things, you might do well if you have a comorbidity, but you may not, depending on what the comorbidity is, you know, depending on how it is. And so for Black and Brown communities, and this is still not 100% pure science, but there is a lot of thought that the enslaved people who came on those boats and in the bottom of the boat exposed to salt water, enhanced or exaggerated high blood pressure in these communities.
Yeah.
So some of these comorbidities may just simply be organic. It just happened because something else happened. You know, it didn't happen because, you know, you eat too much salt or, you know, you're not exercising or whatever. It's just natural. So there is a good preponderance of research that says something like 50 to 60% of people who descended from slaves have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
You know, I and I'm not speaking facts, so don't hold me to those numbers. This is just some research that people say. So, you know, when we were talking early on when COVID hit about it being a Black and Brown disease more than for other groups, we were making assumptions about these groups that were not clear that this was actually factual. You know, yes, we have comorbidities. A lot of the people that we see that die from COVID tend to be a little overweight, a lot overweight, you know, who knows what it is, but something, you know, we need to be careful when we try to malign something to a group that we fully understand what that means, because historically Black people, enslaved people have had a terrible time in healthcare, you know, so right now, still today, we're in 2021, 21st century, Black women are more likely to die in childbirth than any other group out there. And that's not talking third world countries, just in America. That's a pretty startling statistic. That's pretty startling that, you know, we're in modern medicine. I mean, we can save people from almost anything, and yet still Black women are still struggling with childbirth. And then we have all these other things that are in our community, you know, going back, there is our research, a program that was on PBS about early medicine doing slavery. And so people would take a hook and put in the center of the newborn baby's head, the Black baby's head, to find out if they can make them more intelligent, not recognizing putting that hook in that soft spot is going to kill that child.
Yeah.
But some of the things that happen, you know, you've got the Tuskegee Airmen and you got the syphilis experiment. You've got North Carolina extermination, terminating pregnancies and making women infertile. You know, you've got all of these things that, and those are just a scratch of the surface. There are so many other things that had happened to people of color in those ways that you know, am I going to just rush out because somebody says, and specifically somebody who is leaning in the other direction, so white society says, hey, we need you to do this. We have trusted you before, and that's not worked out so well for us. So are we going to trust you now? And so in the sense that you want people to go get a vaccine, and the only people who are advocating for you to get a vaccine don't have a platform to advocate. So, you know, they'll have a Black nurse or a Black somebody come up and say, you know, I got a vaccine, or they have an old person. Yet still, when they talk about COVID and things, you normally see a white person doing most of the talking and directing. So if you really want to change the outcome, you're going to have more, you're going to need to have more Black people and brown people vested in their communities, talking to their communities about these vaccines, not typically the majority group saying, go get a vaccine.
Yeah.
Because we saw, even with the mask, white leaders said, you know, wear a mask. And white people, a small group, I don't know what the percentage was, did not want to, they felt like wearing a mask was a violation of their civil rights.
Yeah, a pretty big swath of people.
Right. So when you think about that, I don't even know what that may mean, you know, like, so the fact that I have to wear a shirt and pants in a building when I go in a building, is that a violation of my civil rights? I mean, because maybe I don't want to wear clothes, which is not true at all. I must wear clothes, but you know, how do you determine what's a violation of your civil rights when you're in a larger society? Now, if you were in your home or in your own business or whatever it is, you don't want to wear, have at it, don't wear it. But if you are coming into other areas where people that may not be related to you, may not be of your persuasion, may not be of your thinking, says, hey, I don't want to be around you if you don't wear a mask. Okay, I get it. You know, the 6-foot social distancing. Every time I go to the grocery store, I cringe because I can be in the fruit section and someone will come stand almost to the point that they're touching me. And I look at them and I'm like, what happened to the 6 feet? And they look at me like I've said something offensive to them. I'm like, but that's what they say, we're supposed to be 6 feet apart.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's a lot, you know, going on.
Yeah. It's especially hard. I mean, it really is hard going out. And when, I mean, I wouldn't say places are super crowded, but people definitely don't have that. Like, I mean, I think everybody's personal bubble is expanded now, right? Like, I don't want to be shoulder to shoulder with anybody that is like not living in my house right now. And it's just hard to, as that like invisible bubble gets wider, I don't think it's gotten wider for everybody else. And you see people walking by and it's like, oh no, man, like even like outside taking a walk, it's like, you know, move off the sidewalk a little bit. I don't want to like brush shoulders with you as you're walking by here. But I think with the whole mask thing, I wonder if that's almost something just like symbolic with people not wanting to put something over their mouth. Like it's so weird that that's what people sort of get stuck on. It's like, oh, I don't want a muzzle. I don't want a mask. It's my right to not wear one of those. And it's like, oh, I don't know. I would not say they're like comfortable and I will be happy when I no longer have to wear one at all, but it's not the end of the world either. Like it's not, it's not that bad.
You know, and I think that there is a lot going on around us, right? So we're constantly being inundated with news about killing, you know, mass shootings, killing of Black, brown people. Mm-hmm. You've got all this stuff going on. We're stuck at home, you know, and then to further the matter, and I don't know whether you've read this yet, but they are now requiring, or at least thinking of requiring, I think the ACLU is looking into this, requiring that you have a copy of your vaccinating record to go on public transportation, i.e. an airplane, a bus, a train, or all that stuff. Yeah. Is that a violation of your civil rights that I must tell you whether I had a vaccine or not? And who are you that I'm telling? So I'm going to show the flight attendant. I'm going to show the ticket person that I have this card. How do you know it's legitimate? How do you know? I couldn't have went home and printed one of the things out myself and said, hey, I got the shot.
Yeah.
How do you manage something like that? What are your thoughts about that?
So I think that's hard. So like personally speaking, like I'm proud I got vaccinated. I'll show whoever wants my vaccine card. Like, I think that's great. But sort of taking a step back from that, I think like, well, what if I had some medical condition where like I couldn't get vaccinated, right? Like I would love to get it, but I've got some, you know, some immune compromise thing where I can't get it. And like if I had to prove that I was vaccinated, even though I couldn't be vaccinated, that would be pretty hard. Like, you know, once we reach the herd immunity thing, like that magic 85 to 95% number or whatever, I think then it'll be great. But I don't know. At the same time, like if for some reason I have some condition that means I cannot get vaccinated, well, maybe I shouldn't be going in places that I could spread it as well. Like maybe I want it, but if I'm going to get on a plane and I'm possibly going to expose other people to it, you know, maybe I should just have to suck that up, and maybe I can't get on a plane until we're in a better spot, until we do reach that like true herd immunity or whatever the right word is for getting everything out there.
The other side of that though is, you know, so if I have HIV, do I have to walk around with a card that says I have HIV? If I have cancer, do I have to walk around with a card that says I have cancer? I mean, the part about, you know, my civil rights becomes how much of my information do you need? And as technologists, I think what we do a lot is we're always concerned with sensitive information, right? How mm-hmm. is it getting out? We have access to it. How do we prevent it from getting out into the wrong hands? Well, now we're talking about things that are just beyond that, right? So if you know my social security number, my address, whatever it is that you know, you have my sensitive information. But now you know what's running in my body. You know yes. Is this my body? Do I own it? And apparently what we are saying as a society, which is where you get to see the other side of the argument about civil rights, is how far do you get to go with what is your civil right in contrast with what is right for the larger society? And that's always been a prickly problem for all societies to manage, because it's not simple as what you just said. Well, you know, you got this, don't go around people. Well, I think we've seen that happen over and over again where people, you know, we've seen the kids on spring break, you see people having mass family gathering, you know, you see all this happening, right? And so whatever logic people use to decide what they are not going to do that defines something. But now you need to know if I have a flu shot, you need to know if I have a COVID shot. What else will you need to know? How much of my life do I own that I don't have to share with you? And not you, Drew, because I would share all my information, but I'm talking about just the average person. How much of that do I share with the larger society for whatever reason?
And I mean, it should really be up to you as far as what you share. Because like, I mean, a lot of these medical things come with, it's not right, but like medical things come with tons of judgment from other people, especially when we talk about HIV, like cancer. I'm sure there are judgments about that, but you know, we're all going to get it if we reach a certain age, and you know,
we are not. We are not. I'm not claiming that. We are not.
At some point, if we reach 150, it's just so widespread. But when you think about like, or at least when I think about HIV, you know, like growing up as a child of the 80s, like that comes with, that word is very loaded, is full of judgment from all swaths of people, and it's really nobody's business at all. And like I can't imagine having to disclose that, or having people have to disclose that to anyone that's like, you know, not directly impacted by it. And I don't know, it's crazy just because everybody's judgy. Like we try not to be judgy, but you know, people's medical business is their own. And you know.
But you know, the question is Drew, so which mm-hmm. do you weigh? Do you weigh the society's larger interest, or do you weigh the individual's larger interest? And this is why the courts are always filled with these subjective outcomes, right? So Roe v. Wade. Have you seen the movie Roe v. Wade yet?
I don't think so. Is this a newer one?
It's a new one. It came out on, I don't remember, it was Netflix. It came out on one of these streaming systems.
It is absolutely
phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, you've got to see it, because it gives you a whole nother context, right? So I thought that Roe v. Wade was a discussion about women's rights, right? Mm-hmm. So what is my right? You know, this is my right. If I get pregnant intentionally, accidentally, rape, whatever, incest, whatever it is, I can go get rid of this thing that may not be something I choose. But now we are in this place where you look at historically, Roe v. Wade started by a conversation in the Klan about Black people having babies. Simply as that. Black people were breeding, and this is a quote, that's what the woman said, breeding faster than white families. So it became reasonable for there to be a way to abort a baby. So then we get to the point where white women are aborting babies oh my God, we got to stop this immediately. The right to life, you know, when does a fetus become a person? You know, all these discussions. And this, again, you get to weigh society's interests versus the individual's interests. And almost always they are in conflict. They are never on the same page. You know, so you want me to get on your plane, I've got to have a proof that I have a vaccine. But my, what about my rights? And so those things are always in opposition. So how do you get around those kinds of things? And I don't know if you experienced that, where who you are as Drew conflicts with who you are as Drew, a member of a larger society.
Yeah. You know, honestly, it's like many of the conversations we have, it's something that I've never thought about before. It comes up like right now. Like, I want to say that the society that I'm in should be more important. And like, you know, my personal beliefs should sort of be sidestepped to that and just keep society healthy. And the other side of that is like, you know, my business is my business. And I don't really think that's, you know, for a lot of cases, society has anything to do with it. And that's a really hard line to draw.
But who decides what society's interests are, right? So let's just say you wanted to go outside and you wanted to plant pumpkins all throughout your yard. Yeah. You were going to have pumpkins every day for dinner. Mm-hmm. Society decides that pumpkin is a weed and it will contaminate my next door neighbor's yard if it gets over there. So you can only plant in this little small part of your yard because we don't want you to contaminate your next door neighbor's yard with your pumpkin weed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who decided that? Who decided that that pumpkin is a weed? Who decided that the next door neighbor didn't want it or whatever? Who decides these things, and how do they get to be substantive in our society? How do they get there? What's the guideline that makes it that our society has determined this? So life and death, yeah, I kind of understand that, mm-hmm. I think. But the question is who decides what that is, right? So right now, if you do a little bit of research, there's no medical expert that will stand on a podium and say, I know what life is. Because you heard what Tom said to us, right?
Oh, yeah.
That with Mr. Dr. Banks. What is life? Now, we think we know what life is, right? So breathing, talking, walking, human being.
Yeah.
Okay. Is a tree not alive? It's not walking, talking, and breathing and doing all that stuff. How do we determine what is life? And how do we know when life ends? So someone has a heart attack and dies. Did that life end? We still don't know the answer to that question either. All we know is there's a beginning and an end, and we don't know why either one exists and what either one really is.
Yeah. 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 That's very depressing, but true.
You know, we have to have these deep intellectual conversations. We can't just gloss over it.
No, absolutely. When we started this conversation, I was like, oh, COVID-19, that'll be like, well, not... Say, I know it'll be a little bit depressing, but I don't think I'll be existentially depressed like I am right now.
I'm so sorry.
No. I'm joking. One other thing I did want to talk about before we run out of time. I was watching a documentary on coronavirus, and there was a gentleman on there who said, he said something that really stuck with me. And he said, and this was something his grandmother had told him, but like he said, when the nation gets the flu, Black people get pneumonia.
Absolutely.
And that really stuck with me, just sort of thinking about, and as we're talking about like comorbidities, like high blood pressure and things like that, like everybody, you don't have to be Black or white to get high blood pressure, but like natural stressors that cause high blood pressure, I think are innately more present for non-white people. And that, you know, it just sort of sucks. I don't know what my point is to that, besides like it sucks, and it's something that we need to think about at least.
And I think a part of our work, your and my work, is this diversity thing. There is nothing that does not touch that, right? So there's nothing. So, you know, Black people have for a long time been the butt of society, especially in America. You know, we get the worst of everything, you know. You can look around you and you see a whole bunch of white faces, white men, white women, whatever it is. We look around and we see a lot of white faces and white men too, except for when we come in our home. And then you have what's happening all around us, Black men for whatever. You got a lieutenant in the army being pepper sprayed because they don't see his little tag in the left side of his window. So that's the flu right there, or pneumonia right there. So, you know, the white person gets pulled over. The only thing they're really thinking about, let's say they're a criminal or something, is how much this ticket is going to cost me.
Yep.
Or what is the problem here? Black person get pulled over and they're thinking, am I going to make it out of this alive? Am I going to live? So our society has so many things that we have inherently done to divide, minimize, defeat, destroy other communities that really aren't prepared or in shape to do so. I mean, we are just, I mean, the 1950s and 60s and 70s, how many years are we out? 30, 40, 50 years out? We're not hundreds of years out. And we were still the short end of the stick. So here we are, 2021, we've got this virus. We've got all these other societal problems, economic, health, education, all these other things. And we're still struggling to find our voice. Yet still there are more people laying stuff on top of us, telling us what we must do, you know, frightening us, you know, making us afraid, you know. So, you know, there's a something, I said this to someone the other day, somebody had asked me, said, if you walked into an elevator and a whole bunch of Black men, would you be afraid? And I said, depends. But I would also say the same thing if I was in an elevator, a whole bunch of white men. I would, it depends. You know, I mean, like, there are parts of the world I can't go by myself. I can't go to some parts of the Midwest and all these places in the South and be out at night because I might not live through it. And what have I done other than be born with this Black skin and this kinky hair? What have I done to this to be my outcome?
Yeah, nothing. Like, I mean, the answer is nothing. It's all of our problems, but it's the perpetrator's problem. And a lot of like, I don't know. How do you fix that? I'm sure. I don't know. It sucks.
Well, I will say one thing, Drew. So it's in the recesses in the back of your mind, it makes perfectly good sense. So think about this. Okay, you own a house in a very nice neighborhood, you're growing your family and all these things. And all of a sudden, let's just say for argument's sake, a white man who is a junk collector, you know, he's got pigs and he's got all this stuff, he moves in next door to you. What does that do to your home value? Now, you're not passing any judgment on what he's doing, but you're thinking simply about yourself, right? Yeah. So when you think about racism, discrimination in society, it's simply about the person who feels that they are under attack or at odds with society. So here are these Black people coming, all these Latinx community people coming to unseat me for my rule. Well, let me put in some places, some like do what Georgia did, stop them from being able to vote or change how they vote, rejection, whatever it is we're doing, we're trying to make sure that we can survive the attack. So your neighbor who's moved in and caused your property values to go down, you're not hating him because he's that guy. You're hating that guy or doing something to that guy because he's affecting your welfare. And whenever you look at the argument like that, racism and discrimination makes perfectly good sense. It's just not logical. It's just not logical. It's just so it falls so far away from reasonableness.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
speaking of which, can I move in next door to you? I've got some bottles and stuff I want to plant in my yard. I want to or make some noise. I'm going to have some rap music playing later on tonight.
I would love that, actually. In fact, I think the house next to us is for rent, and we don't really know the people over there. So I would love for you to do that. No.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.